It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 368 of Low Limit Football on this 29th of September, 2022. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the finalists of the UEFA Nations League has been set with Spain, Italy, Croatia, and host Netherlands making it to the semifinals. The final international break of 2022 is complete, and it is 52 days until kickoff of the World Cup in Qatar. Whose stock is up? Whose stock is down? We're going to discuss that and much, much more with our very special guest, Mr. Ralph Hanna from Guinness World Records and Guarani Vision Podcast, who will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. You had a pretty good week, my friend.
I definitely did, but it's even crazier to believe that we're just, you know, literally 50 days away from the World Cup. It's insane. It's going by fast. And, you know, I'm starting to feel it right now as you and I are here based in Connecticut, as the weather starts to get a bit colder. In my mind is thinking, oh no, winter's coming. But on the back of my other mind is thinking, wait a minute, the World Cup's coming. That's what matters at this point.
The problem for me personally on my work schedule is to figure out how to finagle my schedule to either take days off or not schedule myself with appointments so that I can catch the matches that I want to catch. And thankfully for us, the World Cup kicks off on a holiday week here in the United States. It's Thanksgiving that week. And so many people are going to be off to begin with, especially when the USA faces England on Black Friday, which is not traditionally a holiday. It's more of a shopping holiday. But you could see the potential for big, big, big viewership numbers, especially that first week of the World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we'll definitely talk about the U.S. in a bit, but if it is the second game, but I think it's all going to be dependent on what happens in the first game against Wales. That might be the factor in viewership numbers.
Yeah, you're going to want to probably take that Monday off. I think it's Monday that they play that first match, and you're probably going to want to take that day off because that first match against Wales is going to be a big one. Speaking of World Cup, you know, we should probably let the listeners know that you and I have been feverishly working, you more so than me, my friend, but we have been feverishly working on our World Cup previews, and we're almost halfway done with our project, and we're looking to release it sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to release it by group, like we've been saying, but we've had some fantastic guests, some great insight, And it's going to be an incredible, incredible series of podcasts that we're going to have out. So make sure you guys keep an eye out for it and listen up. You'll want to subscribe to our Spotify. You want to subscribe to Apple Podcasts for us, wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure that you're notified. You know, follow us on Twitter as well. And the minute it comes out, we'll be tweeting it and you'll see it. So it's going to be great to prep yourself for the 2022 World Cup. So let's jump into the show proper here. I know we haven't done one in a couple of weeks because we've been off with the international break and working on that project. But you, my friend, have the trivia question. So if you don't mind, what you got this week?
So I'm going to keep it World Cup centric just mm-hmm. for you. All right. And obviously, you know, the World Cup is such a big thing. And certainly, I think for the managers, it must be the hardest part for all these 32 guys to really pick out a team. You know, it's interesting to say the least that, you know, all these 32 managers have to have the choice of picking players who might play in their first, might play in their second, third or fourth World Cup, mm-hmm. and then having to leave out some that maybe will never play in one. But having said that, there are a certain number of managers who are going to this World Cup who have had the fortune of playing into a World Cup. So the question to you is, can you give me the number of managers, different managers, I should say, who have played in a World Cup and are managing it at this one as well?
Who have played and are managing at this one.
So wow. The managers, the current managers of all the 32 teams in this World Cup, there are only a few mm-hmm. that have played previously at a World Cup. Well, and now they are managing a team at this one.
That's a
fun, can you give me the number?
That's a fun question. That's a great question. I've got a couple of names that come to mind already. I know I have to give you just a number. But,
just a number. You don't have to give me names. Bonus points if you can give me some names. Oof. Because there are some who... There are some that you should know as well because you've probably seen them play. Mm-hmm. But just give me the ones who have played in a World Cup and will be managing at this specific World Cup.
Great question. We will get you the answer to that at the end of the show. So let's jump into our opening thoughts topic for tonight because we're going to be heavy focusing forward on the World Cup based on what we saw this past week and a half in the international break. And we're going to start with you and I. We're going to discuss the U.S. men's national team. So one of those managers that'll be on the list is Greg Berhalter. And I think he'll come into focus. Now, the U.S. men's national team played a duet of World Cup prep matches on their way, a couple of friendlies, losing 2-0 to Japan in, I believe, in Germany on the first one. And then in the second match in Spain, drawing 0-0 with what was highly regarded as a Saudi Arabia B squad. The U.S. doesn't manage to score a goal in 180 minutes. There's still questions of the who they will bring to the World Cup at the number 9 position. There's still a big question there. There's a big question of who the center back pairings will be for the U.S. men's national team, given that Miles Robinson is still going to be out with his Achilles injury and will not make the World Cup. So there were some trial and error there in this particular window. There's questions at goalkeeper right now for the U.S. men's national team. Although Matt Turner did start both matches, there's wingback questions. There's questions in the midfield. There's a lot of questions here. And there's also, of course, with the questions of the team itself and the 26-man roster that's going to go, according to Greg Berhalter, which will be announced on November 9th, there's questions of Greg Berhalter, of course. So, Roberto, I want to start off with your impression of this particular week, this week's matches for the U.S. men's national team. Were any questions that you may have had leading up to this this moment, were they answered?
No. Okay. No, they weren't. I think scoring no goals in two games says it all, really, as if any questions were ever answered in that case. But yeah, it really is. I mean, look, I think Berhalter said it best. I mean, they definitely did not look up to their standards. And, you know, I think anyone with a good soccer mind and even any neutral, really, or doesn't matter how big of an expert you are, I think you could see that they didn't play very well in any of the two games. Against Japan, you know, you and I both saw it, how I think they were outplayed, mm-hmm. significantly outplayed by a really organized Japanese side that, you know, we're going to talk about in our World Cup previews, that are going to be a team that I think for any part of any team in the world is going to be one, not a sleeper, I should say, but definitely a dangerous one for any team if they're not prepared. And I think the U.S. fell victim to that. We saw that significantly, how this team was completely outclassed on all levels. I think really in the midfield, you saw this team, you know, try to get into reckless challenges and then try to make things difficult, whereas they're not trying to find any ideas moving forward. I think you didn't see a lot from really anyone from the attacking line. And, you know, it really took a lot of stops by Matt Turner to try to do something. But, you know, I thought the defense was shaky. You know, mm-hmm. I thought the way that we move forward in transition, where the wingers, you know, or fullbacks, I should say, with Dest and those players are going forward, and you know, you don't see that kind of, you don't see those kind of spaces being open, and you know, it's lack of, I'd say, finishing and composure. And I thought it was really lackluster, to say the least. And then against Saudi Arabia, yeah, I mean, you would think that in the game where, you know, as for all intents and purposes, is what we were told, that it was really a B-side, and that we were told pregame that if the U.S. isn't able to get a result against them, then we have a problem. And we definitely saw that in the 0-0. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the play was slow. I think we definitely did not demonstrate any sort of creativity, really. And it poses a lot of questions as to who are these players that are really going to be vital. I mean, I don't want to say that this is the best that we have. And, you know, I think because the U.S. thankfully has kind of a big list of depth, but how much of that depth is actually useful? Is it really just players to make up the numbers, or are they just, you know, there that are of big quality? I don't know. But from what I saw, I didn't think really that this team can indeed compete in the World Cup, at least at this moment. I think, yes, it's a different environment. I think these players know, I think Greg Berhalter knows, and I think a lot of fans know that things have to switch up when it comes to playing a friendly to then playing in a World Cup. But I think you need to play these games to get your ideas right, because you don't see these players too often. And then once you're stuck together for a couple of weeks, at least in a country like Qatar, I think that's when, you know, you start to really realize, okay, what have we learned from these friendlies? What can we improve on? And I think from now, from my kind of final thoughts, it's a lot. It's a lot that we have to improve on.
Yeah, you know, starting off, I want to go to, you know, what you said about, you know, we knew what was coming with this Japanese side. We knew the Japanese side was going to be very organized. We've said that. We've said it in our World Cup preview that will be coming out. We've said it time and time again. One of the characteristics of the Japanese national team is the fact that they are very, very disciplined and organized, and they attack you and they defend you both ways, disciplined and organized. And, you know, you saw this Japanese side. You knew the U.S. wanted to play out of the back, right? That's what we're working on. And the Japanese side understood this, attacked it, and attacked it by defending high. You know, I don't know if you noticed it, their line was very high. And they challenged the U.S. to play out of the back, asking questions of Aaron Long and Walker Zimmerman to be able to play out of the back, something that they're not really accustomed to at their club team. So for me, the question becomes twofold. Do you, as Greg Berhalter, change what Long and Zimmerman and Robinson and Ream and all the others, all these other options, do you change what they do at their club level when you bring them to the national team? Because there's a massive risk in that. You have to also understand that you need to be able to play through the back and into the midfield and then forward. And that link up just wasn't there for me. Now, do we give Japan credit for their high press? Yeah, I mean, we should. They did a great job of it. I think the two goals were really based on turnovers. So we should give them credit for that, because they did exactly what they needed to do to defend against what many would say is a more talented U.S. men's national team side. But then you saw many of the same problems come out of the Saudi Arabia match, where they weren't able to link up that play. I think, you know, if I saw the stat correctly, and I'm not positive on this one, I think the U.S. only managed just a couple of shots on goal in both matches. That's an embarrassment. I know we have questions of the number nine. You know, who do we use? Do we use Ricardo Pepi? Do we use Jesus Ferreira? Do we use Josh Sargent? For me, I think Greg Berhalter has to answer that question himself with whoever's the hot hand. When we get to
you know, early November, we look at where we stand. Is Josh Sargent the guy scoring all the goals? Okay, if he is, then boom, that's our guy. That's it. Is it Jordan Pefok? You know, is it Jesus Ferreira coming off of the MLS season? Who is that guy that gets us the best opportunity? Looking at our opponents as well, looking at the defenders in Wales, looking at the defenders in England, who is the guy that gives us the best opportunity to do what we need to do to score goals? Because right now, goals are, they're gone. They're just not there. That is going to be one of the biggest questions. Now, you know, playing out of the back, do we do that? I think at this point, you know, Greg Berhalter has gone to bed with that, right? I think this is the way he wants to play this team, how he wants to play this tournament. He wants to play out of the back. And I'm not arguing against it. I just think he needs to be prepared to change his tactics based on his team and their performance. Because if we can't play out of the back, if Wales does put a lot of pressure on us to start, then we're going to need to change up what we're doing to make sure that we can get that ball forward. Otherwise, we're going to be in a nightmare. So does that mean starting a bigger number nine, like a Ricardo Pepi or a Jordan Pefok would be another one of those options, you know, or even a Haji Wright, who came in the last window and is another big target man. You know, do you use one of those folks or do you just simply, you know, go with a smaller guy like Jesus Ferreira and try to be a little more dynamic in terms of what you want to do and how you want to attack? These are going to be the questions I think that Berhalter needs to answer. I think the midfield is set. I think he's going to go in a 4-3-3. I think he's going to go with McKenny, Musa, and Tyler Adams in the midfield. I think Pulisic on one side. The question on the other side becomes, is Gio Reyna healthy? Is Brendan Aaronson healthy? Is Timothy Weah healthy? Whichever one of those three that is in form, in their best position, and ready to go, that's your guy. The middle, obviously, Josh Sargent, Ricardo Pepi, Jesus Ferreira, Jordan Pefok, Haji Wright. You've got to bring three of them, I think. Which three do you bring? Bring the three that give you the best opportunity to get out of the group. I think you need to focus on that. And I don't know that Greg Berhalter got those answers. I'm going to ask you that question real quick, Roberto Rojas. Do you think Greg Berhalter got the answer out of these two matches that tell him these are the number nines I need to bring with me to Qatar? Do you think that answer came to him?
I mean, it would be very hard pressed to not get an answer like that. I think you only have a few that were not on this team that you could indeed consider for the final squad. So yeah, I'd say yes. I think he did get his answer because certainly when you don't see that kind of creativity and then certainly you don't see that kind of effectiveness and just being an overall target man and trying to create any chances on the attack, you can see it there. And so I think for Berhalter's case, it's like, yep, I'm going to have to really now either instill my trust on these certain players, but also understand that, you know, I'm not impressed. And, you know, I think I really need to start looking at other alternatives. And I know we didn't see Pefok in this one, but I think it would be very much a very, I'd say, ludicrous decision to not take into this team for Qatar.
I agree as well, 100%. At this point, where we stand on September 29th, if Jordan Pefok is not on that list, we've made a grave mistake. We've really made a massive mistake. I know there are, you know, last momentary thing that I'm going to throw at you. I know there are people on, you know, in the Twitterverse, which of course, you know, governs the world, but there are of course many people calling for Greg Berhalter's head. And if this were 2020, 2019, even mid 2021, yeah, I'm with you. You know, let's call for his head. After this performance, this was awful. And yeah, let's call for his head. But 52 days from the World Cup?
No, don't. Don't even think about it.
Yeah, this is...
Don't even think about calling for his head at this point.
This is, like they say, this is the girl you brought to the dance. This is it, you know? And I know that, you know, not that we're going to go down the Mexico road, but I know that, you know, we've talked to folks that have said that Tata Martino was on the chopping block before the World Cup down in Mexico, that they're that cutthroat. And I think at this point, 50 days before the World Cup, you can't fire your manager. If you're one of the 32 teams going to the World Cup and you fire your manager now, you've basically thrown out the World Cup, in my opinion. Don't you think?
I mean, Spain did it one day before and they made it to the round of 16. So it's not the unlikeliest option, but you know, the United States is not Spain and neither is Mexico. So yeah. So, I think, yes, you, you in using your girl to the dance reference, you keep that girl for the week at least.
For the remainder of the dance, exactly. And once the dance is over, sure, but not before the dance. You this is who you came with. That's it. So let's table our discussion of the U.S. men's national team because, you know, it was an international break, not a U.S. men's national team break. So there's plenty more to digest from this particular break that we had, the last break for the World Cup. So we are lucky enough to have Ralph Hanna join us from Guinness World Records to talk about the rest of the world. South America, who I think did a, you know, Argentina and Brazil, boy, they look pretty good. You know, England, we're going to talk about them for sure. You know, and a couple others. And even if you want, the team that's not going that looked great this week in Italy. So we can talk to them as well. So without further ado, the Ralph Hanna interview. And joining us now on Low Limit Football from Guinness World Records and Guarani Vision, Ralph Hanna. Ralph, welcome back to the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on. I want to open quickly because we were just discussing the U.S. men's national team, and we can always dabble into them in a little bit, but I want to focus over to Europe. Obviously, we've talked about that this is the last prep week or the prep international break going in, and we had Nations League matches in Europe. So this was not something that was just a couple of friendlies here and there. There was a little something on the line for the European sides as they ventured into this last break. And I want to focus on England and Wales. Obviously, both in the same group going into the World Cup in Group B with the U.S. and Iran, both disappointing in their particular, you know, finishing up their Nations League, both of them relegated to group Pot B of the Nations League coming up for the next season. England not winning a match in their group in Group 3. Wales not faring much better. England at least managed three draws. The Welsh only managed one draw at all. And even though England had a massive comeback against Germany in that final match, ending up in a 3-3 draw, the three goals that they scored in that match against Germany were only three of only four goals scored in the entire round for the Nations League for England as well. You've got to be down. I know there's a lot of talk about Gareth Southgate and his job security, which I think, you know, has come up time and time again. What are your thoughts on England and Wales with their prep work through the Nations League going into this World Cup?
Yeah. Hi, Joe. Hi, Roberto. Thanks for having me on again. But you've put me on the spot in a difficult moment for England, like you mentioned. I mean, I think the biggest thing talking about England is that they've kind of ended these two games in the Nations League with maybe more questions that needed answering than before they went in. So now for example, let's talk about Harry Maguire, who's been heavily criticized at Man United, but there was always the idea that, well, for England, he was playing well. You go back to the Euro 2020, which was obviously in 2021, and he had a really good tournament. So then there was always this feeling that for whatever's going on at club level, you can rely on him in the national team. And now we saw, especially the game against Germany, that some of those errors and individual errors were creeping in. So now there's maybe a question mark over him where there wasn't before. I think you could see there's a commitment from Southgate to play with Jude Bellingham in midfield and have him as a starter. But for all Bellingham's talent and how good we know he can be, there's something that's not quite clicking, and that can sometimes be the players around him or coming into the system. But you didn't feel that Bellingham really was a standout player in either of those games that he was used for. So suddenly there's a couple of questions. I think also with Nick Pope, he's been very good for Newcastle, but is he going to be England's number one? Do they go back to Pickford? Do they think about Ramsdale? But it would be strange maybe to bring Ramsdale in just for the World Cup, as he hasn't been here in the build-up. So yeah, I think these performances have really just given a lot of questions and a lot of doubt going into the World Cup, which is the last thing I think England would have wanted.
And certainly, I don't want to put anyone on the spot here in terms of feeling fearful, but the only team to actually get a win in all their games in this international break was Iran. They defeated Uruguay 1-0 in Austria, and they actually tied a really talented Senegal side as well. So I think for all the problems that probably England, the United States, and even Wales are having, I think Iran would probably be the one with the most confidence, given, and this is a team that, you know, Ralph, I mean, I think is the one that is definitely the least favored to get out of this group. And I think when you look at it as a whole, I think when this group was announced, I think it was going to be very difficult. I think it all depends on the country that you're from and, you know, perspective and you know, talent on paper would think that England would at least go through. And then it would be the battle between Wales, the United States, and Iran. But I'm curious to think if, you know, that kind of confidence level and you know, this is an England side as well that have only won two friendlies this entire year. They have not won a single Nations League game in 2022. So I'm curious to ask if you feel as if though that kind of confidence that England fans are, you know, probably had a year ago, and it's definitely changed a year ago since they made that Euro final, that it's definitely decreasing, and I think it's time to put in turn on the panic button on this England side.
Yeah, I don't know about panic exactly if that's the way to go, but I get the impression that, yeah, the confidence is ebbing away, it's draining away, and this is the worst time you want that to happen, because like you say, the results aren't accompanying the team, but also the performances aren't really inspiring, other than maybe those kind of, I think, 20, 25 minutes against Germany, which was refreshing to see England actually scoring some goals. But I agree with you, there's something hasn't quite clicked, or maybe it's tiredness. Maybe there's just been too many games going on, or maybe it's the fact that the World Cup's on the horizon and they took their eye off the ball in the Nations League, which, looking at some other teams around Europe, it could be said that's happened too. There's teams that I think we know are capable of more, let's say France, for example, that haven't done as well in Nations League. So we'll have to see how it plays out. I mean, you're talking about the group. I think that's England's one solace, is that for Wales, it's been just as bad. I mean, I was looking at some of Wales's results, and they just keep losing, and they often score and lose, which is a worrying pattern, right? That they're finding goals, but they don't have any of the kind of defensive quality to see out any wins. But again, you maybe think that kind of effort in June of getting to the World Cup and beating Ukraine, maybe that's kind of sapped all their energy for now, and they're just getting ready for a second wind in Qatar. And a quick point on Iran, they do have one player, their all-time top scorer their active top scorer is Sardar Azmoun, who scored that winner that you mentioned, and his goals per game ratio is almost as good as Harry Kane's at national level. So I mean, Iran, we remember from the previous time they're in the World Cup, was very defensive and very solid, but if they can find these goals as well with a goal scorer, then they could end up surprising England, Wales, USA, who are all, like you said, like we're in this difficult time, I suppose, and we're almost on a downward curve, and it seems Iran are just coming up at the right time.
And Joe, actually, I wanted to jump into you on this one, because I haven't seen people really say that. And, you know, maybe this is just me thinking negatively because of how the United States have been performing and also how England and Wales have been performing. But is it time to say that this group is a toss-up? That it can go either way and, you know, it's not as straightforward as one would think?
I'll tell you, after this last international break, there's no clear cut. You know what I mean? I still think ultimately when you really get down to it, based on just talent on paper, you've got to think England number one. You've got to, in my opinion, I think you've got to think U.S. number two. I think the Welsh will be very, very close. And, you know, I ultimately you've got to think that. But none of these sides, you know, are scoring goals. I mean, really, you think about it, Ralph, and you kind of alluded to it as well.
you know, you look back at England, they've only scored 4 goals in the Nations League on this last break, aside from the 20 minutes where they scored those 3 goals against Germany. They haven't scored at all. The Welsh, same idea. You know, you look at them, they lose 1-0 to Poland. They lose 2-1 to Belgium. This is a Belgian side that did not really, you know, they didn't overperform in this particular Nations League competition, losing their last match of the break 1-0 to the Netherlands. This is, you know, you wonder where the goals are going to come from. And then you talk about Iran, you know, scoring and beating Uruguay and drawing Senegal. This is, I think this group on paper, like I said, is England 1, US 2. But ultimately, when the matches are played on the pitch, this group is, I think, going to end up a lot closer than what many people think. Don't you think?
Yeah, I can see that, especially with your point about teams finding it hard to score goals. I mean, England, if you take away the Harry Kane penalties, I think it does start to look a bit concerning for them. And if teams aren't really firing and scoring goals, then we're going to get much closer games. And of course, in these situations, it could be a referee decision, or it could just be an individual error. Talking specifically about England, where we saw that against Germany, that could decide these games. So I think, yeah, it's fair to call it a toss up because of this kind of closeness you can see from no real team starting to shine or take things away. And in England's case, just going back to them, I think this lack of goals, again, it's coming from not quite having the right combinations in midfield. So we have to see if Southgate's able to sort that out in time for the World Cup. He obviously doesn't have any games left, but he will have the training sessions. He'll have his video analysis, which he's going to have to do now in the next 2 months or less than 2 months now. The first game, but I think it's going to be it could be much closer than we originally thought when the draw was made.
And certainly looking at some of the teams that are going to this World Cup, I think some of them can feel very positive, some of them can feel very negative, but I want to stick to the positive end, because I think from a South American perspective, certainly Ralph, you definitely have your fair share of intelligence in South America, but I think the two teams that I think could be very happy and very content are Brazil and Argentina. And, you know, I think we all know that Brazil have always been favorites for this World Cup in particular. Historically, they've always been there as well. But you look at them and you look at Argentina as well. Like I said, now 35 games unbeaten under Scaloni. You know, it's very hard-pressed not to consider them as favorites. I mean, do you see that way? Do you see it as those two? Do you think that there's still other teams that maybe are just a bit better than one of them or both of them at this point? I mean, what is your take, I guess, from these both of these teams now, and then really, I guess, the confidence that you get at least from them that they can indeed perform very well at this World Cup and of course contend to win it?
Yeah, I mean, starting with Argentina, we've seen this, as you said, they're on this incredible unbeaten run, and we've seen that Scaloni managed to do what I think previous managers had really struggled, which was to get Messi in the position where he has responsibility, maybe as a leader, but he isn't caged by that responsibility in terms of his expression on the pitch, and he's not trying to do everything himself, and he's not having to drop deep into midfield, which I remember that was like a hallmark of Sampaoli's time when you just found him, he was almost playing as a central midfielder. The person that they've got to do that really is Rodrigo De Paul. I think Scaloni, I think it's the player he's used most in terms of minutes played during his time, even more than Messi. And with De Paul in midfield, kind of really bringing that ability to break the lines and moving teams around side to side, that's giving Messi the space when he can isolate opponents. I mean, he doesn't even need to isolate opponents one-on-one. Being Messi, he can have two or three, but if he gets a run at players, then we know how dangerous he is. And he did it in the game against Jamaica, which I know you were there, Roberto. He only needed, I think, less than 40 minutes to kind of make his mark on that one. And so Argentina, what they have as well is a really good, I think, balance as well. So again, De Paul is I think one of the key players in there. We talked about England not working out their midfield. Argentina certainly have. The key thing for them leading up is keeping all those players fit and making sure they're fit in 2 months' time. And then for Brazil, I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan of Tite. I know sometimes he can be hard to watch for some people because often they play like this very long possession, patient football, and they're not always trying to be too explosive. But we did see a different team, I suppose, or a different performance against Tunisia where they scored 5 goals. I'm sure we'll see a more cautious team at the World Cup because that's just the way Chiche has always tried to play. But they've got so much talent around. And again, like Argentina, they're not dependent fully on their one key player. It's not all the Neymar show. They have Rafinha, they have Paquetá, they have even Richarlison's doing well. They didn't even call up Gabriel Jesus, which is interesting to think that they can afford to have him. Again, a key player for Brazil is Casemiro. If you check the stats in terms of when Casemiro plays and Brazil's results,
there's a correlation.
Correlation. That's what I was going to. I wanted to say coalition. There's a correlation with those results because Casemiro has been so key to allow those players to attack and be free, but holding the midfield and the anchor. And again, I mean, if those key players are fit, these two are right up there, and I think they're in their best moment going into the World Cup for a long time. I don't think these aren't the teams we saw in 2018, 2014. That I know Brazil were favourites 2014 because of being at home, but there were so many kind of problems behind the scenes and things not quite clicking. But they're both going into this now really on a great run of form and with a very balanced team.
You know, Roberto and I have been doing our World Cup previews, and we're kind of trying to focus on the group setup as well, with all groups. But I think after this particular international break, we looked at Group C going into this: Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Poland, and then we fast forward down to the Brazilian group, which includes Serbia, Switzerland, and Cameroon. I've got to think personally, I think the group for Argentina set up a little better than the group for Brazil in Group G. But after looking at these results, I really feel like this is Argentina's group. I mean, it's almost, you might as well put it in stone that they're going to be finishing top of the group. Brazil, I think, will also finish top of the group, but I think their struggles will be a little tougher getting through Switzerland and Serbia and Cameroon, which will all pose their own difficulties leading into the match, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a very good point about the opponents Argentina have. I mean, especially Serbia, we're talking about players that are good at international level. I mean, Mitrovic's goals per game ratio is incredible for Serbia. And what we'll see is he's doing well at Fulham as well. So he's coming in on a really hot streak, and that could cause a lot of problems for them. But then, yeah, then you have people like Switzerland that we know have a more tactical base and could maybe frustrate Argentina. But then what we've seen, and again, what Scaloni's done really well is he's always found answers to those kind of setups, because we saw it in the qualifiers, especially when Argentina had to play at home against teams. They didn't actually beat Paraguay, which was one of the few teams that took some points off them at home. But they had teams that they had to break down and that would sit and try and counterattack, and they were able to do that and break that down. So I do think with that kind of possibilities, they have a good chance of getting through and doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. So before we let you go, I want to ask you one last quick question. Looking back at this international break, at some of the teams that have played and how they performed, would you give me a 3 up and 3 down, meaning 3 up, which teams do you think
improve their perspectives going to Qatar? And which three teams do you think, you know, degraded in their perspectives going to Qatar?
Okay. Should I go three down first? I guess I'll go three down first. I mean, England, as we talked about, I don't think they are, they're not looking as strong as, say, when the draw was made with those results. And we talked about that at length. I think France have so much quality that I would still maybe consider them up there one of the favorites, but the results at the moment haven't shown that. So heading into this, and maybe not as positive for France. And then also Germany, because I felt that Germany were going to be, following the Euros, I felt they were going to pick up and use that as a catalyst to go on and perform better. But we saw, especially with the game against England, they're not really a finished article, I think. They're still certainly work in progress. So I think, which is interesting, I picked three European teams there, but I think England, France and Germany haven't done themselves any favours. And then in terms of three up, well, I would definitely say Spain, actually, staying in Europe. I think Spain are quite exciting now. And what we've seen from Spain is, I think I'm right in saying they're the only European side that finished first in their World Cup qualifying group and has also done well in both Nations League and the Euros. So in the last kind of four competitive tournaments, including qualifying for the World Cup, they're the only one that's maintained a high level. You have people like Italy that have done very well except for World Cup qualifying, or you have England who did very well except for this Nations League. But Spain have managed to keep that level up there. And so these players are getting more time together. Luis Enrique knows his side very well. And I think they could be certainly one to watch. And then I think Argentina as well, as we talked about just at length, Argentina, they're such a well-balanced side, and they really have found their kind of 11 or their 14, I suppose, of players that they will end up using. So they've definitely done very well. And then the other one, I'm a toss up between Brazil and Netherlands, but I think I would say Netherlands, because that result against Belgium was very interesting, and it just shows that they were able to kind of grind out the results, and maybe that's something that I hadn't put them down for previous to this. So I think I'll go for Netherlands more than Brazil, because I guess I already have Brazil up there. So if we're talking about movers, then Netherlands are my third one.
Roberto, what do you think? What's your three up, three down right now?
Yeah, I think for three up, I think I'll take Brazil and Argentina out, just because I think they've always been considered the favorites and they're on good unbeaten streak as well. So I'll take those two out. I agree with Ralph. I think the Dutch definitely look like a side that are very impressive, to say the least. And I think, you know, the game against Belgium was certainly a kind of a result for them to indeed be, you know, I'd say not pretenders, but definitely a team that can indeed challenge for this World Cup, as they typically do with their talent. So I put them up there. I'd also agree with Spain. I think Spain definitely looked good on all levels. And, you know, Luis Enrique has really tried to manage this side very well. And so I think they definitely go up there. And I think for the third one to go up, I'm going to say... that's tough, really. I like Denmark. I like Denmark. I think the result against France, and you know, I think the three down are, for me at least, are France, England, and I'll say the U.S. as well. Why not? Yeah. So I'll take those three in the three up and three down.
You're taking a lot of my thunder, because I think for me, I definitely want to put the Dutch there. I think they are playing some magnificent football. I think they're running pretty high right now, and they're dangerous. You took my thunder on Denmark. Being able to down France twice in the Nations League, including in this particular international window, I think speaks volumes for them. I know that they got a massive push, given that their solidarity after what happened with Christian Eriksen at the Euros last year. I, you know, you understand the solidarity and the and the and the push, the fight for them. That either that has carried over for a year with, you know, carried over so well that Christian Eriksen's playing for them now, or they're just that good. And I think it's the second, not the first. I really do think that the Dutch are that good. They're that well organized. My third toss-up, I want to go outside the Euro-American realm, you know, and I'm having trouble deciding, but I think I'm going to go with Iran on this one. Just because of their performance, 1-0 over Uruguay, 0-0 draw against the African champions in Senegal, I think those are massive, massive results. And you couple that with the three down, you know, I would love to just give you an all group B three down, England, U.S., and Wales. Pick one of those teams. I think you want to put them in the three down. It doesn't even matter which one you pick. You're going to be right. So the fact that Iran had a good window and all three of the teams they're going to face had a terrible window, I think is massive for them. I would probably put the U.S. up at the number one slot in that window for three down because of the fact that they didn't even score any goals. I think they managed either two or three shots on goal in 180 minutes against two teams that they should have beaten. So I want to put the U.S. there. I'd like to put England there, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to put Mexico there as well. Mexico right now are in such disarray. You would have thought that some of that would stabilize, but it hasn't, to the point where they're talking about sacking Tata Martino before the World Cup. And I think I want to put France there as well, only because the fact that France is going to face Denmark in this World Cup after having lost to them twice, I think there are some concerns there. And for me, that's a big thing because, you know, I said 4 years ago, France is the one that's going to win the World Cup in this particular window. I thought, you know, 4 years ago that France would be the 2022 champions. I didn't think they'd win it in 2018. And this concerns me a little bit. So I think I want to put France there as third because they're going to have to get there. Roberto, I know you want to ask who wins the World Cup. Are we already starting our prediction part of the program?
Might as well. I mean, all right. At the stage, and I'll let Ralph go first on this one.
All right,
but,
Ralph.
Right now, yeah, I'll go and ask.
No pressure, right?
Yeah. Let's just say right now, after this international window, you know what Roberto is proposing, that we ask every single guest from here to the World Cup, who's going to win it? And I'm on board. I'm not going to give my answer yet because I'm the host and I'm allowed to do that. But but Ralph, yeah, let's get a prediction from you after what we've seen in the international window. Who wins the World Cup?
This is really hard because from what we've seen, I would lean towards Brazil or Argentina. Mm. But from what I know, in terms of European sides, often seem to find a way when it matters, then I wonder if France or Spain. Oh yeah, this is really hard. Okay, so I have to choose one, I guess.
Yeah,
just one right now on September 29th.
There are no wrong answers here.
I'm gonna say Argentina will win it, and wow, it will be like a Messi spectacle in Qatar.
I was just gonna say, you know, and I'm not making a prediction, but wouldn't it be amazing at, you know, in December if either the Dutch or Lionel Messi were holding that trophy? I think that would be something spectacular. I think those two teams would probably be the biggest rooting interests of favorites around the world, don't you think?
Yeah, well, yeah. Brazil as well. Brazil always are popular anywhere, yeah, as well.
But they're multi-champions. They've won it so many times.
They've gone 20 years, though, without winning it.
Oh, Argentina have gone almost 40. You know, think about that. And the Dutch never. Johan, yeah, Cruyff, just, all the greats, you know, Gullit, Van Basten, and not a...
If it was up to Ralph, he'd go for England.
Yeah, 66. 60. Sure.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure, sure. Even, but I even think longer, but I can't feel that it's their time, not the way they're playing. I think their chance was the Euros.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, it's not going to be Italy, so... Ralph, I want to thank you for joining us on the show. All the best to you and the family, and we always look forward to having you on the show, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for the invite. Happy to be on here and share some thoughts with you guys.
And special thanks again to Ralph Hanna for joining us on the show. Roberto, I know we're doing this show at a different time, so we're going to give you matches for this weekend to prep you for it. So let's jump right into it. And Saturday, 9:30 a.m., we're going to run you right off to the Bundesliga, where first place Union Berlin will travel to Eintracht Frankfurt in their match in the Bundesliga. That'll kick us off for the weekend. Then at noon, the big one in Italy is going to be Inter Roma at noon, followed by Sevilla Atleti in Spain at 12:30 p.m. Then we'll go to Sunday, the Manchester Derby. Will Manchester be red? Probably going to be blue. Manchester City host Manchester United at 9 a.m. Then we'll go to France for Lens and Lyon at 2:45 p.m. And we're going to close out the weekend with Portland and LAFC as they start to head to the finish for the MLS season. Currently, LAFC and the Philadelphia Union tied on points for the Supporter Shield title in that one. We're going to fast forward you to Tuesday, where we're going to give you Inter and Barca at 3 p.m. in the Champions League, and followed by on Wednesday by Chelsea and AC Milan in the Champions League as well. And then we'll return next weekend again for more. So, Mr. Rojas, you gave me a great trivia question at the beginning of the show. Why don't you repeat it for the listeners?
Absolutely. So there will be, as hard as it is to pick World Cup winners, and you know, I think we're still going to be scrambling our brains and figuring out who do you think is going to win it. I can't imagine these managers being in the spot to pick the players that they have to choose of their opportunity of a lifetime. So having said that, there have been some managers who have been in this World Cup beforehand and were going to be managing at the 2022 World Cup, mm-hmm. who have had the fortune of playing in it as well. Can you name the number of managers who previously have played in a World Cup?
So I'm gonna just look through the groups really quick just to kind of see if I can remember exactly who's managing the teams. I gave you Berhalter, right? I'm Berhalter's an easy one. Deschamps is another one. So I know I've got two. I'm thinking there's one there, there's three, we're going to go with, let's see, four. I'm looking through very quickly, five. I don't think he played in the World Cup. Six. Let's see. Just for laughs, because maybe I missed one, I'm going to give you a number of seven.
Higher.
It's higher. Okay. Then let's go nine. I don't think it's much higher than that.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
Ten.
Oh. You know, I counted through. I went with, and I can't think, I don't know why his name is escaping me right now, but the manager at Senegal, I think he played in the World Cup.
I'll give you the list as well. I can give you the list.
Go for it. Let's do it.
Yeah. So, yep, 10 different managers. And yes, the first one that isn't a part of this list is Elio Cissek, played at the 2002 World Cup for Senegal. Mm-hmm. He's managing Senegal. The second one on the list is Gareth Southgate, played in two World Cups, 98 and 2002 for England. Greg Berhalter played in two World Cups of the United States. Lionel Scaloni played in 2006, actually was a teammate of Lionel Messi, ironically enough.
Yep.
That's how far back and how young he is as well. Played for Argentina. Didier Deschamps, of course, won the World Cup as a player, was the captain of the 98 team and did it as a manager. Yep. Luis Enrique played in a couple World Cups
for Spain. Had that one too, yeah.
Yep. Rigobert Song played in four World Cups for Cameroon.
Okay.
The manager of Cameroon at this moment. Dragan Stojkovic is the manager of Serbia, but played in a couple World Cups for Yugoslavia as well. So that counts.
I missed
him.
That one, yep.
Yep. Pablo Bento didn't play for South Korea, but did play for Portugal at a World Cup as well in 2002. And the last one, Otto Addo, the manager of Ghana, played for Ghana in the 2006 World Cup. Managers on this World Cup have previously played.
Those are the ones I missed. Those last three were the ones that I missed, and that was it. I went through and I'm scanning, and those are the last three I missed. So, fantastic question, and a great way to kick off really what becomes the World Cup season, right? At this point. So
yeah, definitely. I'm excited.
All right. So without further ado, let's hit the closing music.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. So for episode 368 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Ralph Hanna for joining us on the show. Next week, we will give you an update on all the teams as they get back to their from their international breaks and into their club competitions, including the Champions League as well. So for episode 368 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.